session number 24897. General Home, Rail 7. You told me what happened when the communists arrived in the area of Hong Kong,
yeah,
in the north.
We were. My wife arrived in about June, 49, this was. And we were very lucky to live out in the New Territories, not far from Brigade Headquarters, in a bungalow which belonged to the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank. It was a weekend bungalow, but all these buildings were, of course, given over to the army because of the heavy reinforcements. And the nearest we got to engagement, I remember coming out one Sunday morning, I heard some firing, and we watched a minor air battle going on over the frontier in China, which was the Communist Air Force against the Nationalist Air Force. And that's the nearest, of course, we got to any fighting.
Did you ever think that there was a serious possibility of fighting against the
Communists? Suppose we took it seriously. We had to. And the original commander was very active, and, you know.
I mean, how much did you know about the Chinese Communist Army?
Not a great deal, I think. No, not much.
Had you had any contact with the Nationalists?
No.
Presumably they must have been just across the front.
Yeah, they were.
From the New Territories.
Indeed, in one village, up on the northeast corner of Hong Kong, the frontier goes in the middle of the village.
And did you see them at all?
Can't remember. I suppose we did. I suppose we saw civilians. I don't know if we ever saw the Chinese army. I'm not sure. Can't remember.
What was the internal security situation like in Hong Kong?
Well, all right, I think. Yeah.
Do you remember if anyone thought there might be communists inside the
I don't. I know. I don't think it came our way, though. I mean, the Hong Kong police were pretty good, I think.
Yeah. But presumably, I mean, as a garrison brigade earlier on, when you were the Kowloon Brigade, it would have been within your remit to have a threat analysis of whether there was likely to be a need for support to the civil power.
I don't remember anything about that, no. It was very much pre-war, colonial stuff, Queen's birthday parade and all that, you know.
What happened when the communists arrived then?
Nothing at all.
Did you stand to or go on a higher?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, but we weren't there. Yes, we were. We were there the whole of 49. And then in early-ish 1950, we were sent down as a brigade to Malaya. I suppose the threat to Hong Kong had lessened.
Yes.
And the bandit war had started in Malaya. And being in a Gurkha battalion, they were required in Malaya.
Was this before or after the beginning of the war in Korea?
Oh, before. Oh, yes, Korea hadn't started.
Right.
And we went down to Malaya in April 1950. And when I left, after I'd done my three-year tour, in about February 52, they were still there in Malaya, Johor.
I was going to ask where you went when you got into Malaya.
Johor, with brigade headquarters in Johor Bahru.
So what was the state of affairs in that area when you arrived?
Well, Johor, well, it wasn't good. The bandit war was not going very well. And Johor, a fellow called General Briggs arrived in Malaya, and he made what was eventually called the Briggs Plan to defeat the... And I think it was... I'm not an expert in jungle warfare or bandit warfare, but I think he had made the appreciation that it was no good trying to win the war by beating the communists in the jungle. What he'd got to do was to separate the communists in the jungle from their support from the civilian population and the villages. And this was a tactic, of course, that won the war in the end. And he was intent on protecting the villages and getting them on our side, while at the same time our soldiers were active in the jungle trying to keep the communists at bay, really. And Johor was his... He started off by making Johor the priority one target. And at one time in the brigade in Johor, we had 6 battalions in the brigade. And of course, Johor's a big state. And
what were the battalions in the brigade actually doing? What sort of operation?
Patrolling in the jungle. I mean, acting on intelligence, was there was some, but otherwise patrolling their battalion areas.
Speculative patrolling.
Yes.
Yeah. How large would a battalion area be?
Well, Johor is a big state. I suppose you divide it up into 6, really, and big areas.
Who did that? Did you do that, or did the brigade commander?
Oh, I think the brigadier. I mean, he would do it.
He decided which battalion should go
right,
where.
That's right. And of course, the battalions were based in the towns, such as they were in Johor. I mean, they had firm bases, like brigade headquarters was in Johor Bahru. Mm. I think we had a Gurkha battalion based there too, and it was the rifle companies who were sent out doing the jungle work.
What sort of scale of patrols were being mounted? Were you sending out sections or platoons or...?
Well, I think a whole company would go out
company.
And establish a base in the
yes.
jungle and then patrol out from there. Mm.
What sort of strength would they employ on those
patrols?
Patrols out, yes.
I don't know. I can't remember, I suppose.
And was there something that was determined by brigade headquarters, or was it left to the local battalion or company commander?
I think it was generally recognised, operationally, how you operated. Mm. And I suppose a company would go out and establish its own base in the jungle, from which its platoons and perhaps sections would go out patrolling.
You mentioned getting intelligence in some cases. Where did that come from?
There were joint intelligence centres with the local police and the local civil government. Mm. And I think we call them joint intelligence headquarters.
How did you get on with the police?
Pretty well, I think. Pretty well. Yes, I mean, I don't remember any problems in Johor Bahru.
And what about the colonial authority, the civil?
Yeah, fine.
Were you co-located with them, or were you?
No, we were in our own barracks in Johor Bahru. Yeah. There was certainly one, if not more than one, British officer in the local joint intelligence headquarters, and he would have been somewhere in the town. I can't quite remember where in Johor. I suppose perhaps in the police headquarters, maybe.
He'd be sort of LO.
Yes, working with the police mainly.
Where are all your battalions, Gurkha battalions?
No, we had the Cameronians, which was our resident battalion, so to speak. We were called 26 Gurkha Brigade by this time.
Yes.
We had the 2nd, 6th, 2nd, 10th, 1st, 2nd. Did we have another British battalion? I can't remember. But we certainly, I'll tell you who also was in Johor at that time, the 13th, 18th Hussars.
Were they part of the brigade?
Attached too.
Attached?
They weren't integral part, but I mean under our brigadier.
So they're under command?
Yeah, because they were based at Klang in the middle of Johor.
What did you do with them?
Well, I think they were patrolling in their scout cars mostly.
Presumably that would mean they'd be confined to roads.
Yeah, pretty well. Yeah. Pretty well.
And did it result in a great increase in the workload when you had 6 battalions?
I can remember being pretty busy, but of course there were no... our brigadier used to mount operations of his own. I don't know if brigade operations, I think. And that was all stopped by Briggs.
Oh.
He said this is not the way to win the war, to try and flush out an enemy in the jungle with a brigade operation, because you'll never find them, you see, really.
But would this be a sort of brigade sweep?
That's what he was very keen on. And he was told to stop that by General Briggs. General Briggs said, now it's my policy to try and keep the communists at bay, more or less, while we divorce them from their support. This was his. Yeah. And it worked in the end. It took a year or two, but it worked in the end.
Did the larger scale, the brigade operations, did they have any success?
No, they didn't really. No.
What sort of things were done then on brigade operation? How would you...
Well, you mentioned it by saying sort of a brigade sweep. I don't know if we ever did it from a brigade level, but he used to make battalions do this.
So you'd have a battalion combing the jungle.
That's right, in a particular area. Perhaps on intelligence, but I don't think they might find much.
I mean, would you have a stop line put out if you were going to do something like that?
I don't know how that... I can't remember how it was all done.
How did the brigadier react to being told his...
Well, I think this was done on a high level, and this applied to all the forces in Malaya, and they said this isn't a new policy.
What were the enemy doing when you arrived then, when you first deployed into Johor? What were the bandits
Well,
doing?
They were trying, weren't they, to subdue the civil population and turn Malaya into a communist state. And of course, one of the main targets was all the rubber estates and our British planters and so on. And I think the planters had quite a lot of casualties during this time, our planters.
Well, I mean, was there a very high level of bandit activity?
I think at the beginning. Yeah, I think there was at the beginning.
What sort of strength did you think they had? Did you have any idea of their numbers?
Well, I think we did. I think we must have been told, but I can't remember now. I mean, it must have all been in the intelligence reports.
Yeah. And, I mean, do you remember if it was specific about where they were based or located?
No. Otherwise, we'd have, I suppose, gone after them, and the policy would have been then to go and attack them. But there were successes. Just before we got down there, I think it was up near Kluang somewhere, one of the Gurkha battalions surrounded quite a large party of common. I think they killed over 20 in one engagement. But that was very much the exception rather than the rule.
Do you remember if at that time you managed to capture any enemy or turn any enemy?
I don't remember. Don't remember capturing any.
How long did it take before you could actually start seeing progress towards a reduction in enemy activity?
I'm not sure we saw much up to 1952. I think it was very much going on. And I think the major successes came... who went out there? General Templer, didn't he?
Yes.
And I think it was when he arrived and after he got going that the major progress was made. But my memory's a bit vague on that.
And did the communists mount any direct attacks on the army units there, or were they just going for the civilian planters?
Well, they did a lot of ambushing on the roads, and that was where the what's he called, the High Commissioner, Henry Gurney, was killed while we were there. I remember he was on his way up to Fraser's Hill, was it, one of the holiday places for the weekend, and he got ambushed and killed.
Did that have a significant impact on the level of activity and state of mind?
I think it had an impact, all right. But whether it increased the level of activity, I suppose it did in that particular area, but I think otherwise, probably not. Couldn't do, probably.
What about the native population of Johor in general, the ordinary Malay populations? How do you get on with them?
Well, all right. I mean, certainly in Johor town, they were all quite friendly and nice, yes.
And were there any troubles in the town itself?
Not that I remember. No, I don't remember.
Just out in the...
Yeah, no. Funnily enough, it always surprised me that the communists never, as far as I remember, attacked any British barracks and never did an attack on any what you might call a town. Certainly Johor town was not...
Well, the barracks would be a hard target, wouldn't it?
Presumably.
Yes. Were there any attacks on company bases or battalion base areas in the field?
Not that I remember. No.
What sort of precautionary measures could you take against this communist activity of ambushing?
Well, in brigade headquarters and battalion quarters, in the brigade barracks, I don't remember many. But outside, I mean, it was normal warfare. you obviously had your sentries on at night and so on. And
well, if you were going on a road convoy or something like that, I mean, how would you protect yourself against
ambush?
Well,
the brigadier, I didn't go around a great deal. The brigadier was out and about, and on the occasions we did go out, we used to go in scout cars.
Was that right?
A couple of scout cars, yes. But sometimes, I mean, near Johor, it was a curious mixture of peacetime and wartime. I can remember we were on quite good terms with the various planters around Johor Bahru, and I can remember going out to lunch one Sunday with a planter who was several miles out of Johor Bahru, and we went in the brigadier staff car, and we had grenades in the staff car, and we were all armed, but we just drove without an escort or anything.
Did you ever actually see a communist?
Did I? No.
Yes.
No.
So you knew they were there, but they were...
Well, you didn't know quite well. You knew they were in the area.
They were hidden.
Yes.
Must have been rather frustrating to have this secret and hidden enemy operating.
I suppose. Yeah, I don't think we thought much about that. I don't think we got frustrated, and we had a job to do, and I think we just got on with it.
Did you see any progress then by the time you...
No, I don't think... I can't remember. I think it was... The Briggs plan was still very much in its infancy when we left.
You were saying the Brigadier was out and about visiting. Did he have a routine, you know, morning prayers and then go out and visit, or did he just do each day on an ad hoc basis?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if he went to visit a battalion, he had to warn them before that he was going. I dared to before. No, he hadn't got a routine. No.
How about your own days? Were you keeping to normal office hours?
Yeah, pretty well. Mm. Yeah, occasionally used to take the brigade headquarters out into the field for a bit of change and practice.
What's this, an exercise?
Yeah,
effectively.
Yeah, just spend two or three days. Yeah. We used to go on to rubber estates
set up in the field.
That's it. Yeah. So we didn't lose touch with living in the open.
Sounds rather like normal training.
Yeah, it was, really. Mm. Yeah.
Were the battalions able to do any training as well as their operations, or were they fully occupied?
I think pretty fully occupied. Yeah. I think they came out of the jungle. They were rotated, so I suppose when the company came out of the jungle for a bit, did a bit of training.
What did brigade headquarters do then during the Briggs plan? I mean, what sort of orders were you issuing?
Well, we were running the brigade, really. Mm. I mean...
Well, were there any brigade-scale operations after the Briggs plan?
No, not brigade-scale.
So it was all battalion?
Yeah.
So battalion commanders were given...
Given directives,
yes.
Yes.
What sort of thing would you put into a directive, then? I mean, it must have been less specific than an operational order.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Mm. Just general guidance.
And where would you get your orders from? Were they be coming down from...
Well, our headquarters, divisional headquarters, was in Kuala Lumpur.
Kuala Lumpur was the overall capital, I think.
Yeah, I think, because I can remember when we first arrived in Johor, new to this, I can remember going to Kuala Lumpur, perhaps two or three times, to get orders and discuss with the staff there.
Yes.
Because I think they must have been our direct headquarters. Mm.
Now, as far as I remember it, the Briggs plan consisted partly of removing squatters from the edge of
correct.
The jungle and
correct.
Putting them into
correct.
New settlements further
absolutely.
Away. Yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, were you involved in planning those?
No. It hadn't really got underway, I think, properly. And I don't remember getting involved in that at all.
What happened to you when you came to the end of your appointment as Brigade Major to the Gurkha Brigade in Malaya?
We came home in February. I think we got home in February 52. And I then I was on leave until August.
It's a good long leave.
Brilliant. And then I went back to the Staff College as a DS.
Had the syllabus changed at all since you had been a student at Staff College?
Not much, except they were just beginning to talk about nuclear warfare.
Do you remember what they were saying about nuclear warfare and its effects on military?
Not much. There was one exercise in Europe which didn't strike me as very realistic, but at least we were starting to try and think about it, the effect.
Do you remember why it wasn't realistic? What struck you about it?
Well, I can remember that, for instance, in the administrative area, the whole of the administrative troops and organisation were sort of put into sort of concentration areas with big gaps in between them, and I always thought that one bomb would have destroyed the whole lot. But I mean, at that time it wasn't. It was so new to us, really, and this was rather towards the end of the course. I think we just took the exercise and were quite interested, and that was that.
When you were on the directing staff, did you specialise in any particular area of the syllabus?
I didn't. No. Oh well. You took syndicates for some terms.
Yes.
And then you were off the next term because you were rewriting exercises.
Ah.
And I was in the attack team.
Attack team.
Mm. And I can't remember how long that was, probably one or two terms.
What sort of scale of attack were you discussing? Were you talking about divisional level or brigade level or...?
We were still talking certainly about divisional level, if not still corps level. I mean... You know, it was still as far post-war, almost as the same as in the war. You know, big forces, and most of our big exercises, of course, were based on Germany and on the Army of the Rhine.
And were the sort of tactics you were teaching the same as you would have used in the closing stages of the Second World War?
Yeah, very much so.
44-45.
Except much more emphasis, I think, on mobility.
Oh. And was the army more mobile than it had been, relatively speaking? Had it got more motor vehicles and...
Well, I think it had.
...armour?
I think it had. I can't remember now when the armoured personnel carriers came in, but... certainly we were thinking about them, yeah.
And what about the methods of instruction and the exercises? Had they changed radically since you'd been a student?
No. Syndicate discussions, toots, written exercises, no, all really. Same basis.
Do you remember any of the students particularly from the time you were there as a syndicate DS? Were there any who made a particular impact on you?
Not really. The only chap I remember particularly was Tony Farrar-Hockley, because he was a student, and he had just been a prisoner in Korea, and he gave us a very good lecture. He was a student, but he gave us all, you know, the whole staff corps, his instructors and everyone, a very good lecture on his time in the Chinese prisoner of war camp.
Did you have a large number of overseas students at that time?
Yeah, quite a number. I mean, I couldn't give you a figure, but would it have been 30? I don't know. 40? Commonwealth? And NATO were beginning? Yeah, NATO were beginning to come.
Were there exchange officers on the staff from NATO countries, you know, acting as part of the DS?
Well, there was certainly an American. Commonwealth, I think, I remember mostly. Canadian, Australian. I don't really remember European instructors at that time. No.
Do you remember if you did a battlefield tour while you were...
Yeah. There was a battlefield tour my first time there. I didn't go on that. My second year, I think it was cancelled for financial reasons. So we had to do a mock-up, a sort of indoor thing. And I think it was my last year, we went back and did a battlefield tour, a proper one.
Do you remember where you went on that tour?
Well, we were based in Caen. And I think I can't remember really the battle. I think we did the Merville Battery, as it studied that. I can't remember the others, really. Yeah. They used to study Goodwood later on. We didn't do Goodwood, and I wished we had, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you remember if you went anywhere near the area where you'd been?
No, we didn't.
Actively engaged.
Well, not really. We were on the battlefield at all. We were further east because we were west, round Bayeux and those places,
yes.
And Tilly and so on.
Yeah. How was this tour conducted? Was it done as a matter of commentary by the DS, or was it the veterans on the ground explaining what had
no,
been
we
going
didn't
on?
I don't think we had any veterans.
You didn't?
I can't remember now. Mm. We had one or two guest artists. I can remember Alistair Pearson, who had commanded a parachute battalion in 6th Airborne. Mm. I think that's what it was, guest artists rather than veterans. Mm. Well, I suppose you might call them veterans. But they were chaps who... Commanders, really, who had taken part.
Yeah.
And it was a series of presentations, and of course followed by questions out on the ground. I mean, there was no indoor. I think it was all outside, all out of doors.
Was it followed up by any sort of written exercise
or anything like that? I don't think so.
How did you go about assessing the people you were teaching on the course? What sort of qualities were you looking for? Future good staff officers?
Well, I don't know, really. I mean, you had them in your syndicate discussion. You got an idea of how the old thing was working. You had written exercises. Mm. And competent, I suppose, really, in one word. Mm. The fascinating thing was, though, I found them when they all arrived, you see, and all the students we had really fought in the war, and I don't say when they arrived they thought they knew mostly about it, but they got caught up pretty short. I mean, the first term was amazing. It was all indoor work, and looking back on it now, I mean, the first exercise they had to do was to write a letter.
Yes.
As a staff officer.
A service letter.
Yeah, service letter.
Yeah.
And it used to go back to them absolutely covered in red ink. You know, commas, full stops, this, that and the other. And they were amazed, I think. But it soon set the tone. And after the first term, I mean, the sort of detail was rather... you didn't have to teach so much detail. But I suspect they don't do that like that nowadays. I don't know.
Did they have a great deal of reading? During the course?
No, not a great deal, although they did have to write a paper on military history. Some book was chosen and they had to write a thing on it, and that involved, but that was towards the end of the course, and apart from the exercises and so on, that was really the only reading they had to do, I think.
When they went out to do toots and things of that sort, what sort of places would you take them to?
Well, wherever the exercise was set, I can remember the sort of rolling country, southwest of Basingstoke, we went to once. In the early days, we went closer in, sort of south of Odium. There was an exercise south of Odium. A river crossing, I don't know if that was that sort of exercise or not. My memory is vague, but we certainly... had quite a lot of outdoor exercises, and we went all over the country, and I suppose it had been well established in the farmers that we could go there. I mean, somebody else had made the arrangements years before.
When you did your telephone battles...
Oh, yes, there were two of them during the course.
But where were they set? Were they set in England, or were they set...?
Yes, in England, I think, yes.
Was this the usual thing of blue against red?
I think so, yes.
Do you remember if you had a term dealing with insurgency and
counterinsurgency? Yes, we did. I think we called it something else. We called it civil defence, was it?
Support for civil power?
Yeah, something like that. Yes. Yeah, old-fashioned stuff.
Old-fashioned?
As you would think now. Mm. I mean, magistrates reading the law, you know.
Riot Act
and that sort of thing, yeah. And the demonstration. When we were teaching these different kinds of warfare and civil defence, it always started off with a central demonstration. And I can remember on the age of the civil power, or civil defence demonstration, it was a good old-fashioned stuff with a magistrate, you know, one of the DS dressed up as a magistrate, reading the Riot Act.
And then shooting the ringleader?
Yes, that's all, yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Mm.
And then what happened after you'd been directing staff at Camberley? I think you moved on.
I went back to the 1st Essex, as it was then, as a company commander. Yeah. And I went back and